Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the lunch break. I'm a little less crabby than I was before, so appreciate that. For the record, my name is Logan O'Grady. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. For those unfamiliar with MNSEIA, we're a 501c6 trade organization. We are honored to have 170 member organizations as part of our little organization that we run. We are here to support a number of different efforts in the 2024 legislation before us. Our overall 2024 legislative agenda is really about expediting the deployment of solar energy across the board. And that starts with small rooftop scale solar. So we definitely support House File 5171, which was authored by Representative Carroll on Solar App, which incentivizes local units of government to switch to automated permitting. And really what that does is it helps move permitting timelines for small rooftop systems up quite a bit. Sometimes that takes 6 to 8 weeks to obtain, and this can bring it to one day. So we definitely love to see that in the final conference committee report. When you switch to kind of that mid-scale market of kind of community solar and up, interconnection is a huge thing for us, and so we support Representative Acomb's House File 5097, which creates or directs the PUC to create a cost-sharing fund paid for by developers to help make distribution side upgrades, and it's extremely important on that side of things to see that move forward. And then on permitting reform, we have been publicly supporting the Senate version of the bill, but I do understand that there's work being done behind the scenes on that, and we look forward to seeing an outcome on that because, as I mentioned, expediting the deployment of solar across the board from small scale to large scale is extremely important to our membership base. We were disappointed to see that solar awards wasn't included in this year's legislation. That has been traditionally a bipartisan supported program for many years, and it really helps incentivize people that might be just outside their ability to afford a rooftop system to be able to do so. So I'm disappointed in that, but other than that, I'm happy to stick around for questions.
Thank you, Mr. O'Grady, and thanks for your testimony. We will provide time for member questions, of course, and our thought was to get through all the testifiers first. With that, we would welcome Mr. Rick Evans, and on deck, we would have Madeline Smirillo. Mr. Evans, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. My name is Rick Evans. I'm with Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy believes that the provisions in all of the bills that are in front of you will be significant and helpful in the energy transition that we all face. I'd like to especially address four of those provisions very quickly. First, on the issue of permitting reform, Xcel Energy participated in the PUC-led task force that recommended the changes that are before you. The group identified efficiency and improvements to electric infrastructure permitting processes while importantly, these recommendations would not reduce opportunities for public input and environmental scrutiny. The provisions of the task force, we believe, are best represented in the Senate position in Senate File 4784. One of the recommendations that came from the task force included moving the EERA office from the Department of Commerce to the PUC. We believe this is an important part of the Permitting Act. To give you a real-life example, on May 2nd, there was a hearing at the MPUC on our route permit to construct the Minnesota Energy Connection Project, a new transmission line between Sherburn and Lyon counties. The project is critical to Xcel Energy's plans to interconnect thousands of megawatts of renewable energy with the grid. Given the tight timelines for regulatory approval and construction, every week matters in this project. At the PUC hearing on May 2nd, the EERA said that they could not meet the deadline for their review of the project, raising the prospect of delay in the entire process. If in the future the EERA were part of the PUC, we believe the improved coordination would facilitate the approval process on these critical projects. Second, the Xcel Energy endorses the House provision in Article 13, reforming the distribution interconnection. We appreciate the work of Chair Acomb in bringing the stakeholders together and putting together this critical reform. The interconnection process is complex, expensive, and frustrating, and the House lays out a process for fixing that in Article 13 of the omnibus bill. Third, Xcel Energy supports the grid-enhancing technology and recognizes the contribution of Representative Kraft in bringing those stakeholders together to put together a good provision in the bill in Article 12 of the House bill, which seeks to get the most out of our transmission grid for the least cost. Finally, we are happy to see that both bills support the RDA grant to the Sabathini Community Center, which you heard about earlier today. We'd like to thank Senator Frentz, Representative Akam, and the members of their committees for all of the work that they put in over the course of the session. We believe that this bill will make a valuable contribution to energy policy and look forward to the adoption of these elements. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Evans. Members, I apologize, I skipped Mr. Thorson. Mr. Thorson, if you want to come forward, and then we'll have Madeline Smurillo. Apologize for that slight gaffe. Mr. Thorson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and then present your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is John Thorson. I'm legislative director for LIUNA Minnesota, North Dakota. We're a union of 14,000 men and women who build our state's critical infrastructure. And it's LIUNA members. We build wind, solar, and other infrastructure needed to meet Minnesota's growing energy needs. But before our members can go to work placing concrete and steel in the ground, project owners first require permits in hand. LIUNA members participate actively in the permitting process because our jobs depend on it. Over the past decade, our members have attended hearings or filed comments in more than 50 different permitting proceedings, most of which involved large wind and solar projects. While we value the chance to provide public input, we also have learned that the process for approving critical infrastructure projects can be slow, costly, and confusing for the general public. In fact, the North Star Policy Action Group reviewed Minnesota's process and found that we're falling behind. Clean energy projects are taking longer and longer to permit, and at current pace, we would not meet our clean energy goals until 2062. It's not just about clean energy goals either. It's about meeting a demand for energy that will be growing rapidly over the coming decades to handle a transition to electric vehicles, heat pumps, data centers, and critical manufacturing that we're trying to bring back to the United States. Minnesota has an opportunity to lead and be a magnet for investment in both clean energy and for businesses that depend on clean energy, and that would mean thousands of new family-supporting and potentially union jobs. But first, we need to make it easier to build clean energy infrastructure. The Minnesota Energy Infrastructure Permitting Act does this by simplifying, standardizing, and streamlining the process without sacrificing opportunities for public participation. It's based on the work of a diverse group of stakeholders convened by the Public Utilities Commission, and it has the potential to shave 6 months or more off permitting timelines and save millions of dollars and make the process more accessible to the general public. Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, we see the wisdom of the recommendations of the group and encourage the adoption of the House provision changing timelines for utilities to exercise right of first refusal to build new transmission. We also see an opportunity for pairing the Minnesota Energy Infrastructure Permitting Act with provisions in the House omnibus bill designed to streamline the process for adding distributed generation, including improvements to distribution interconnections and solar app. Together, these bills could form a complete package to help us quickly and efficiently reach our goals, leveraging opportunities on both the transmission and the distribution grid. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Thorson. Okay, I've just been informed Ms. Smurillo is actually bumping back in testimony a little bit, so I believe now we're gonna go to Mr. Bull, and then on deck would be Beth Soholt. Mr. Bull, welcome back. Thank you for safely making your way to the testifier's table. If you could please introduce yourself and then present your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Frentz, Chair Akam, members of the conference committee. I'm Mike Bull. I am a senior policy advisor to the Elite family of businesses, which includes Elite Clean Energy, a wind developer, New Energy Equity, a distributed solar developer, and Minnesota Power, who provides essential electric service to the city of Duluth and across the Iron Range to 150 customers up there. Minnesota Power leads the state in providing over 60% of our electricity supply to customers from renewable resources. I'm happy to provide brief comments on the legislation before you, starting with the electric infrastructure permitting reform provisions. I represented ELITE on the stakeholder group convened by the PUC, and the stakeholders, as you know, as you've been told this morning and this afternoon, developed 12 consensus recommendations to make the process of approving, siting, and routing large electric infrastructure projects more efficient without reducing public input or environmental scrutiny. That was our charge. And together as a package, these recommendations, including streamlining regulatory review of projects and placing environmental review staff within the commission, will save significant time for each project that needs approval. The time saved in the permitting process also, it multiplies quickly as the number of projects to meet electricity demand increases in the coming years. The Senate approach more closely aligns, I think, with the stakeholder recommendations, and we urge support of for those recommendations. The House provision, there are a number of House provisions in their version of this permitting reform section we also support. And Mr. Thorson mentioned one, the right of first refusal timelines. We think that could be very helpful as well. This conference committee also includes an important amendment authored by Senator Housechild and Representative Lisegaard to improve interagency coordination and communication on projects that fall under the jurisdiction of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency or the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We think that could be very helpful and urge your support for that provision. I also want to highlight a number of items outside of permitting reform that are important to ELITE. We appreciated the opportunity to work with the authors of several important bills which are included in this conference committee. We worked with Chair Akam on legislation that addresses distribution interconnection congestion, a significant issue on the XL energy system, and one that we could see developing in the future on the Minnesota power system. And so we think that it'll be good to have that framework in place. We worked with Representative Kraft on legislation to review and implement grid enhancing technologies, opportunities to address congestion on our transmission system. We think that could have significant impact. And we worked with Zach Stevenson and Senator Jason Rarick on stakeholder-driven updates to improve the efficiency and implementation of the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act that was enacted in 2021. And I would point to Zach if he's not there. I'll talk to him after, and I'll thank him for his great work on that. We urge adoption of all these provisions in that each will help our company strengthen the grid, construct necessary electric infrastructure, address the needs of our customers, and successfully transition our electric grid to decarbonize by 2040. Thank you. That's all I have for you, and I'd be happy to come back for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bull, for your testimony, and if you can remain, I think there could be member questions. All right. Members, we're towards the end of the list of testifiers. I have Beth Soholt next, then Sarah Wolf, and then Madeline Smirillo. And we will open it up for public testimony if you're not on the list, just to be clear, once those three testifiers on the energy provisions, to be clear, once the testifiers are done. Ms. Hull, welcome to the committee. Thank you. If you could please introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Friends, Chair Akam, members of the committee, good afternoon. I had to change it from good morning. my name is Beth Soholt, and I'm the Executive Director of Clean Grid Alliance. Our organization is a Minnesota-based advocacy organization working with renewable energy developers, state agencies, utilities, NGO advocates, MISO, the grid operator, and others across the Midwest to implement the transition to clean energy that is currently underway. Clean Grid Alliance has been doing this work for a little bit over 20 years. And I just want to start by thanking the legislators, all of you, for your work on the energy provisions. Chair Akam, Chair Friends, there have been a lot of ideas on the table, a lot of things thrown at you, and I just really appreciate kind of the open mind, listening ear to many of us that have ideas. Regarding the permit reform provisions, As Mr. Bull noted, Clean Grid was also part of the stakeholder group that worked on the dozen ideas that emerged as consensus. The stakeholder group really met with an eye towards finding alignment on the permit process to help Minnesota achieve its carbon-free by 2040 law. The dozen ideas are really meant to work as a package, all work together. You don't get the same result if you just choose, for example, 11 out of the 12. Primarily, the shift of EERA, the Energy and Environmental Review and Analysis, from the Department of Commerce to the Public Utilities Commission is an essential change, as many of the other reforms in the bill depend on clear and concise communication that can only be achieved when environmental review work is being conducted directly under the correct responsible governmental unit. This change would bring energy permitting in line with the structure of all other agencies in the state, as well as other states in the region, moving away from outdated and unnecessary model that separates the work being done from the regulators that oversee it. So we urge the committee members to support a bill that includes the shift of EERA. You know, meeting the 2040 energy law will require great effort, and this agency realignment will go a long way to help the regulatory process keep pace with the work that needs to occur to meet the 2040 requirements. So again, I just want to stress that the 12 ideas that came out of the collaborative work group, and it's pretty novel when you look around. There were utilities and lots of other voices around the table all concurring. And I would urge that these common sense and essential changes, including the EERA to the PUC, be implemented this session. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Soholt. We'll now have Sarah Wolf come forward and testify, and then our last listed testifier is Madeline Smarillo. Ms. Wolf, please come forward. Welcome to the committee. If you could start by introducing yourself, please, and then present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Friends and members of the committee. Thank you so much. My name is Sarah Wolf, and I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. And we strongly support streamlining the building of clean energy projects and ensuring needed transmission is available to help us meet our climate goals. Thank you for your work on this bill. Our concerns surround changes that impact projects beyond clean energy that are present in the Senate language. We are particularly concerned about one of the bill's provisions that we've heard a good bit about today, and this is a different perspective I'm offering here. Concerned about the provision that would relocate from the Department of Commerce the EERA, or Energy Environmental Review and Analysis provision, relocate that to the PUC. We are concerned because we feel this would diminish the independence of the environmental review function, not just for those clean energy projects, but for all energy projects, which include pipeline projects as well. And as you know, this EERA staff provides independent third-party analysis of proposed energy projects' environmental impacts to the commission. And the commission is then responsible for evaluating that environmental review alongside all other perspectives in order to make fair and balanced decisions about our energy infrastructure. The separation between the EERA staff and the commission does two important things. First, the separation ensures the commission doesn't have influence over the content of the environmental review. Second, the separation gives the commission an appropriate amount of distance from the review to effectively issue impartial decisions about it, such as determining whether or not an environmental impact statement is adequate. The commission should not be put in the position of needing to find its own work inadequate or not adopting its own findings. We also believe the Department of Commerce is a more publicly accessible home for EERA, and that moving EERA staff to the PUC would reduce transparency. Currently, all communications between commissioners and the EERA staff are required to be public. This would not be the case if the EERA staff moved within the PUC. And we should be striving to increase insight into public decision making, not reduce it. Finally, the provision to move the EERA from the DOC to the PUC has been described as being part of that permitting reform stakeholder report recommendations. However, that process did not seek consensus, and no votes were solicited on any of the ideas presented. We support reducing unnecessary barriers to save time, but moving the EERA function to the PUC sacrifices independence, accessibility, and transparency that is important to the environmental review process. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. And our final listed testifier is Madeline Smirillo. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Friends, members of the committee, Chair Acom. I am glad to be here. My name is Madeline Smirillo. I'm coming to you now representing the American Clean Power Association, a nationally based organization to represent clean energy developers across the nation. I am a Minnesotan. I participated on the stakeholder working group, and I heard the concerns and the conversation about all the groups in that stakeholder process. It was fantastic to see all of the different stakeholders come together and to see this unprecedented effort being turned into such fruitful legislation on behalf of both the House and the Senate has been amazing. We've had fantastic collaboration with the leadership in both bodies, and we hope to see the bill passed. That being said, last week at Clean Power, there were 10,000 attendees representing all 50 states in the nation and other countries coming together to celebrate clean energy in the United States, and it was housed here in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, at the Convention Center. And one of the first things that we heard was from Governor Walz in his opening remarks about the importance of permitting reform and getting it done this year. Last year, we passed the 100% standard, and the whole time we were going through that bill, we had emphasized the importance of implementation. Because it is one thing to set a goal, it is another thing to meet that goal. And implementation is going to be essential to the success of that standard to continue to formulate Minnesota's leadership in the nation as a clean energy leader. And we heard from Governor Walz that this permitting reform package is essential to that implementation. So I'm here to ask you today to thank you for your leadership throughout this whole process, but also to emphasize the importance of the EERA transfer to the rest of the reforms within the package. Simply put, the EERA transfer is the glue that holds everything together. Without that change, the other reforms are less cohesive and not as smoothly functioning. So as ACP's representative today, I want to emphasize the importance of that transfer. I also think it is important to recognize the implications that are being stated to reject that transfer. We have environmental review being conducted by the appropriate responsible government units across the state of Minnesota in all other sectors. We see it across the United States in many other states. To say that we must separate environmental review from the responsible governmental unit in order to have effective and secure permitting or environmental review is to imply a sense of mistrust in the PUC and our regulators that we have trusted to make all these other decisions about our rates, about our electricity, and about our generation and interconnection. So I want to thank you again. I want to especially thank the House for the inclusion of provisions, including grid-enhancing technologies, one of my favorite things to talk about, in the bill. And we hope to see a final copy that includes the staff transfer to ensure that the whole package functions as a unit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Merle. Thank you to all the testifiers. Members, before we go to member questions, are there any members of the public who did not sign up to testify who wish to come forward and testify to any of the energy provisions? All right. Seeing none and understanding that there are some testifiers who are no longer in the committee room, are there any members who want to ask any particular testifiers any questions and have us bring them back up? All right, seeing none, are there any member comments to any of the energy provisions, whether they were testified to or not today? All right, seeing none, I'm going to confer with the chair here for 1 second. Just hang on. Okay, So here's what's happening. After consultation with Chair Akam, we're going to recess for the rest of the day. As you know, the gavel will go to the House tomorrow, and the House will schedule the hearing. I think the chairs would like to make closing comments. And once again, any members that want to make closing comments or ask any questions, this is your chance. Representative Kraft.
Got to remember to turn it on here. So, you know, when I first heard about the stakeholder group was in the Legislative Energy Commission, I think, over the summer, and we had a pretty thorough presentation of it. Never in that presentation did I hear that the glue was the transfer of the EERA. At the time, the stuff that was said was each of these will save a month or two here or there, and together they could save, 9 to 12 months. So I haven't been engaged as much with the process, but I'm struck with how the discussion around that has changed from when it was initially presented. I don't know if someone wants to comment on that, but it was not. That point was not made when the presentation was initially given to us.
Representative Kraft, I'm going to open it up to any members testifiers who would like to address that. As you know, in the recommendations, it was the number one recommendation for the legislature. I don't know that I remember the LEC discussions the same way, but we're all hearing from different sources. Long story short, if anyone would like to come forward and address Representative Kraft's concerns, I see some shuffling. I see Ms. Cirillo standing. This must be a sign of further response. Do you want Representative Kraft to reframe that? All right, Ms. Cirillo, welcome back. Any response you want to give is welcome.
Yeah, thank you to the chair and thank you for the question, Representative Kraft. I remember those early conversations. I think we were all very excited coming off of the stakeholder group. We had 30-something recommendations in front of us. And the first one, like you stated, Chair, was the EERA transfer. And I think a big portion of the reason that wasn't so heavily emphasized was likely because we didn't understand that it was going to be such a point of contention. And we didn't think that we would be having this conversation this late in the game. I think looking back, I wish we would have been able to better, more effectively communicate that earlier on. But that being said, I think we have, over the last month plus, made a concerted effort to communicate the essential nature of that portion. And I know I have had written communications and verbal communications with leadership over the last, like I stated, a month or so, trying to emphasize that this is something that industry and the stakeholder group finds essential to the inclusion of. Thank you.
Ms. Brillo, if you want to stay there for a second, Representative Kraft, any follow-up?
No, I'll just point out that it was number 5 on the list. It wasn't number 1 on the list.
I believe you're skipping over the 4 administrative recommendations. It is number 1 on the legislative recommendations. Anyway, Representative Kraft, any further questions? I did get a request to have Mike Bull come forward and talk a little bit about the EERA. Thank you, Ms. Cirillo. Mr. Bull, if you don't mind coming back up. Even if you mind. There was a request, Mr. Bull, and members, to have you address the EERA, both the origins of the EERA and then the discussion that's sort of arising here, which is the suggestion that it wasn't a priority or wasn't essential at the time of the LEC.
Sure.
So that's 2 questions for you, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the question. To give a little bit of background, how EERA ended up at the Department of Commerce, I was one of a few people that's responsible for that. I was a senior policy advisor to Governor Pawlenty at the time. And both the decision-making, the permit issuance, and the EERA staff were housed at the time at the Environmental Quality Board. And we felt in the administration that the EERA staff were moving a little slower, throwing up a little too many barriers to transmission projects that we felt were necessary. And we thought that that moving the decision-making, the permit issuance to the commission to align that that with the certificate of need issuance that was already housed at the commission made sense. But we were a little concerned that if we had moved the ERA staff to the commission, they would be insulated from our influence. And we wanted to have some influence over what the ERA staff were doing at the time. So the idea of that they are more independent at the Department of Commerce, that wasn't our intent at the time. Our intent was to try to align their work with the energy policy of the administration and to keep them from being too far insulated. You know, the commission, as you all know, is, you know, it's an independent agency. It's members are appointed for 6-year staggered terms. They have to be divided in terms of their political background. And so they are, to the extent that you want the ERA staff to be independent, placing them at the commission is the reason for that. And that's why we think that's the right move for this. Besides the efficiency of the operation, having them there at the commission will definitely move things along better.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. I guess the follow-up question, though, is was that staff transfer considered essential at the time that the report was first issued?
Back in December, yes. It was a key component of all the discussions within those Lipschultz facilitated conversations at the commission in that stakeholder group. It was a bulwark for the rest of the recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. Any member questions for Mr. Bull or anyone else? Seeing none, I think we're going to go to chair comments and then wrap up. Chair Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate all of the testimony today, all the work from the people who participated in the task force, and all the expertise certainly in the room. And what I will say is, as most of you, if not all of you, know, I have concerns about the transfer of EERA from Commerce to PUC. I think that while there was a broad stakeholder group, that stakeholder group did not include many environmental justice voices. I think that there was a gap within that environmental perspective that we heard from today in testimony, who have concerns. And so given those concerns, that's why the provision wasn't included in the House version of the bill. I think that the goal of the process of the task force was to find efficiencies and time savings. Working with the Department of Commerce, we have continued in conversations between the House and the Senate to look for compromise and paths forward, and identified some efficiencies that can be made within the existing location at Commerce, whether it's lifting the ex parte communications, other modifications around completeness and scoping that would save as much time as was estimated in the original task force report. And so I think that there have been alternatives, and there continue to be compromises, certainly from the House. I think we will continue to have conversations as this session rolls to an end. But what I will say is the session is coming to an end. We've got just a couple days left before we run out of time. And so in that vein, I hope that we all can find wisdom in focusing on those things that we all agree on. And I think there's many within the other portions of the bill, as well as within the permitting reform. And so a question I have for staff today, and with staff I mean Mr. Eloff, if there's an ability to look through the permitting reform provisions and identify those that are not impacted by this change, and so that could be seen as advantageous but not be impacting this issue that is somewhat controversial. And so maybe if there's an opportunity to get that ready for tomorrow when we meet, but that would be a request I have of staff to look and see if there are provisions that could be agreed upon that are aside from the transfer.
Mr. Eliff, I take it you are okay talking to Representative Akam offline about any of that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Eliff. Madam Chair.
I think really it's just that I hope that we can all agree that it's not worth throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And I know that's a comment that has been used many times over the last many weeks as we've discussed this. And I think there is a lot of good here, and it would be unfortunate for us not to get the most benefit we can where we do share agreement. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you all of you, especially considering the schedule was a little jumbled. Again, the House is getting the gavel tomorrow. But a few thoughts to the topic at hand about the staff transfer. First of all, we had 31 members of the work group. And at the time the report was issued, two of those members raised questions about the staff transfer. That was the Department of Commerce and MCEA. Legitimate questions where they were worried about autonomy and transparency. And so as we began our work, to Representative Kraft's point, it's true. We had unanimous support for all but that provision. Two members of the work group had said we have concerns. However, that concern was successfully addressed by amendment language, which has been agreed to by MCEA and working with the PUC and the Department of Commerce. So what I would like to share with the members of the public is known to many of you, and I see some nodding heads. The provision of the staff transfer is linked to the other 11 inextricably and has the full support of every stakeholder that participated in the work group. Let me make that clear. Every single member of the work group supports the staff transfer with the amendment. So the question becomes, for what reason would we choose not to make the number one legislative recommendation? And I encourage the members of this conference committee to adopt that provision and to go forward. And to Madam Chair's point about throw the baby out with the bathwater, it is the Senate's analysis that more than half those stakeholders are reading into the refusal to transfer the staff as something not based on expediting or improving permitting and have said, no transfer, no bill. And so I don't want there to be any gray area as we work on these provisions and as we try to achieve our clean energy goals. We are trying to find a path, and that path seems to me best described by taking the recommendations of the work group, again, universally supported by all the members of the work group, even though not every legislator supports them, and moving forward with what would be a sensational success, including many of the non-permitting provisions, which I think the chair and I will talk about later tonight. And that is what the Senate position best represents: respect for the work group, respect for the PUC, respect for the stakeholders, and respect for what's really going on here, which is we want to permit clean energy as effectively and as quickly as we can. And without the staff transfer, testimony overwhelmingly shows we will not get that. Therefore, I would urge members to consider this carefully as we look forward to the discussions that have probably 48 more hours. With that, I look forward to the House reconvening us tomorrow. Again, thank you to everybody. Thank you, Madam Chair and staff. We are adjourned.